For me, the most important war, the thing that we are fighting for in the world today more than anything else, for me, is the spirit of the West. And the spirit of the West has been under attack by globalists, by fucking adversaries of all kinds, like the trader merchant, I shouldn't call it the merchant class, the trader parasite money changer class, right? That class, mm-hmm. whoever the fuck that is, has been looking to destroy the productive spirit and soul of the West in any way that it can, weaponizing everything from Chinese to fucking Indians to central banks to everything, right? And if that war can be fought without dropping fucking bombs and fought in a non-kinetic manner through economic means, that is the win of fucking wins in the history of humanity.
So what the hell is the deal with all the tariffs? What's up, guys? Welcome back to the show. This is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We've got a really good one today. So Svetsky and I went on Liberty Lockdown with Clint. This was like a week or so ago, and we finally had a conversation about, and Svetsky's a big Trump supporter. I'm mixed bag there. I don't think it's the horrific Nazi takeover that a lot of people claim it is. I'm also not super thrilled about Trump in particular. There are some very interesting things that are happening, but the tariffs to me seem like a huge mess right now, but there is a thread of logic to it. And Svetsky does a pretty good job, but we all get into it. I think this was just a great episode to kind of get a perspectives of a few Bitcoiners on this topic and what all is unfolding right now. However, since this show has happened, the tariff policies have been swinging so erratically. They've been 145% tariffs, no tariffs, 100%, no, 100, we're back to 145%, just been all over the place. And I think just the sheer unreliability, the instability of the policy, and so absent of what the tariff itself even is actually a problem. Like, it's just, it's hard to do business if you have no idea what your cost is going to be. But the three of us just went after it, and we covered a whole bunch of stuff in this one. And since I've gotten personally a few questions about this topic, I thought this was a really good one to put in the feed and you guys might appreciate it. And to be perfectly frank, I am really curious about what the hell all you guys think about this. But there's the whole range of takes on this from people who listen to this show. And I am just really curious. I am really curious to hear it. So before we get into it, this show is brought to you by the Jade Plus hardware wallet by Blockstream. And by the way, they just posted on Noster that for the next 1,000 people who buy it, they're actually throwing in a free month of Cloaked Wireless, which is a private, no KYC, no SIM swapping, like super secure wireless cell service that you can also pay for with Bitcoin, by the way, giving away a month of it for free. And that is a really solid combo. In fact, it's making me realize that I had forgotten about Cloaked and I was going to go back to him. And that actually reminded me, I've already got my Jade. You guys have seen it. I do need to check out Cloaked again. Don't forget, code GUY gets you 10% off there. Also, check out the Human Rights Foundation and their Financial Freedom Report. Their newsletter is an amazing resource, and all of the work they do is literally irreplaceable for both for Bitcoin and for the story and pushing the value and the reason for Bitcoin's existence and for the fight and keeping up with the news and events of the issue of human rights and liberty around the world. And then if you were looking for a Bitcoin wallet that has on-chain and Lightning, and it is entirely self-custodial, BitKit is it by the crew over at Synonym. They build amazing things, and I love the design of this wallet. If you haven't checked it out, the link is right down there in the show notes. All right. With that, let's go ahead and dive into this episode. This is Clint from Liberty Lockdown, Alex Svetsky, and myself, what the hell with the tariffs?
I think most of you guys already know my perspective on the tariff issue. It's a very nuanced view. I'm somewhere in between. I do lament the fact that we've lost our industry, but I also understand that tariffs are taxes, and I am, as a libertarian, opposed to taxes. However, I also understand that the federal government needs revenue, and therefore, if the federal government's going to exist, I would probably prefer a tariff regime as opposed to an income tax regime. So I'm nuanced to the point that I've upset everybody. So what do I do in these type of situations? Well, I invite on two people that can battle it out and help me decide. I got Guy Swan, who's more of the Austrian bent, and then we've got Alex Svetsky, who is essentially a mercantilist, as best I can tell. I'm just kidding. Maybe you are. I don't know. But we're gonna get to the bottom of it. So yeah, opening salvo, gentlemen. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, sir. I was gonna say a good way to have said that is like you pissed everyone off, so now you want to like divert all of the hate and vitriol to two other idiots.
It's their fault.
We're happy to take it on.
Don't be mad at me. Be mad at them. Yeah. So, I mean, that's honestly my opinion though. Like I am very much like, I have all of the Austrian principles that still guide me, but then I also have very much a pragmatic sense of like, well, I'm not going to get sound money, you know, unless I just migrate to Bitcoin, which I kind of have, but, in terms of from like the economic, like the fiscal policy of our nation, we're not going to get there. So what do we do in the interim? And I think that it's been very interesting to see this debate. I think in some ways it's been very good to have it happen because it's forced a lot of people to think about how global trade works in a way that I don't think people have and maybe ever. Anyways, I'm just curious where your thoughts are. So either of you want to start, I'd be happy to let you.
I'll just say mine probably is similar to yours. I haven't listened to you talk about this issue specifically yet, sure. But I can guess by your short little explanation that it's probably pretty aligned with mine. My problem structurally, what I think the real issue is that you can't, like I think there's a very specific reason why this shifted all in 1910 to 1920 from tariffs to income, social security, and all of these things as the main taxes, is that you cannot play the tariff fighting game when you have a global reserve currency and a central bank. Like, I think you have structurally undermined your manufacturing and you're trying to, it's like poisoning your liver and then taking a pharmaceutical. Like your problem is that you poisoned your liver. You're just trying to cover it up or get around it with the pharmaceutical. The central bank is we poisoned our liver and we have the global reserve currency. And then the pharmaceutical is the tariffs are going to fix it. And it's not. Like the problem is structural to how our money works. And maybe it can like put up a barrier, but I think it just means higher costs for everybody in the US. And there's still a premium on the dollar in foreign trade, unless we just stop being the world reserve currency. And there might be enough pressure to do that. I don't know. Well, it's wild times.
I think had Trump maintained his threatened tariff policy, there's a distinct possibility that you would have seen such massive inflationary pressure in the US as our global trading partners start to, I mean, this was Trump's explicit goal. He wanted to equalize trade. He wanted to have the same amount of trade from Vietnam into America as America into Vietnam. And he wanted to have more and more of our US dollars, which I think it's 60% of our fiat is circulating around the rest of the world, and he wanted to bring that money home. Well, if you bring that money home, Don, very, very inflationary, very inflationary. And I just don't know. Like, I don't know. This is why I wanted to have Alex on, because I hope he can steel man how this would have worked out. Because as best I can tell, he was sprinting headlong into the Triffin dilemma, and he didn't seem to have an answer as to how to remedy that. So, what are your thoughts?
All right, gentlemen. So I think we all know here that money printing is an issue. I don't think that's news to any of us. And I think people listening to the show appreciate that as well. I don't think, you know, Guy, what you mentioned about like, you know, we moved on to income tax and this and that sort of as a result of pure money printing. I don't know if that's like exactly true. I think these things are always a little bit more complex. You know, there's, you know, if a parasite can figure out a way to take your money, you know, whether they're money printing or not, I think they're going to try and figure out how to do that. And you know, I'm fundamentally no fan of taxes and tariffs and all this sort of stuff. And I get the economic argument. For me, like I've been battling with this. I just put a link to a Substack that I just literally published 5 minutes ago, which tries to take a more nuanced view about this whole thing. And what I basically distilled it down to was this: tariffs are kind of like an economic handicap, because you know you just increase the cost, and you know the person profiting from the tariff is the whoever is charging the tariff, which in this case is the federal government. To your point, Clint, it's like, would you rather have an internal taxation regime, or would you rather do a taxation regime where you tax imports and therefore give your own people an advantage? It's clear which one is better. So there's not, I don't think there's even an argument there. I think it's fanciful to believe that the federal government's going to disappear tomorrow. So if we have to sort of choose a lesser of two evils, that's sort of evident. But the argument that I try to make in this essay was the economics come second here. This is no longer a matter of economics and materialism. This is a matter of doing, like, sacrificing economics for the purpose of preserving culture, people, and nation. And I had a bit of a sort of a beef with Knut Svamholm on Twitter the other day, and not a beef, like we just sort of went back and forth, and I asked him, what's a nation? And he said, oh, it's a made up construct by a bunch of parasites who want to tax you. I was like, no, that's fucking stupid. You know, a nation is its people. The word nation derives from natio, which is the Latin for shared birth. If you don't understand that concept, like it's sort of very difficult to have a proper conversation about this, which the nation and the leader that is selected by the nation, whether through monarchy or whether through democratic principles, Republican, whatever the case is, his duty is to his people first. And right now, I think, you know, I mean, it's been very clear from the beginning, you know, Trump was all about make America great again, not make Wall Street rich and prosperous, right? Like there's a disconnect here, which I think is very hard for some people to get their heads around. Like you can maintain the position that tariffs are not economically intelligent for anybody to do, probably less so than America, because you know America's got some very interesting components to it. Like it's one of the largest land masses in the world. It's the largest by fucking far consumer market on the planet. Like I've sold many products with many businesses, and irrespective of what I've sold, what businesses I've ever run, 70% of all my sales or more have always come from America, and 30% from everybody else combined. So it's not even like, we're not even talking the same galaxy. So America's got the land, it's got the population, it's got the consumer base, and it's got all the fucking money. Like once again, like that's, you know, everyone is a poor in comparison to America. So,
a poor. You know,
like, yeah, seriously, everyone's a poor. That's like literally what they are, right? So you sort of take that into account. Like, you know, if Salvador tomorrow was to impose a bunch of tariffs on all of their you know trade partners, like they would literally handicap themselves because they don't have any of those. They don't hold the same hand. So anyway, coming back to my point is that there is an economic argument to be made, but there is also let's imagine, you know, you have this a neighborhood, and you know the neighborhood has like stopped producing anything internally because they just decided to buy everything externally and they've just become essentially consumers. Someone on the neighborhood decides, no, we should stop, we should invest, we have the money, we have the economic wherewithal to invest in ourselves for a little bit, so let's give ourselves an advantage and slap a tax on everybody else, and let's rebuild our own productive base. And I think there's an argument to be made here, which is America needs to put its culture, its ethnos, its people, and its own self before everybody else. And I think this is an effective way to do it, even more effective than Bitcoin or anything else at the moment, because like Bitcoin is just, as much as it is a stronger reserve currency superior to the US, all this sort of US dollar, all this sort of shit, Bitcoin is way too young to become the global reserve currency today. Bitcoin still needs a decade or two of maturity. It's not going to happen. This is a way of, I don't know, slowing down the globalist machine. You know, people will make arguments about, look at the supply chain, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can't make a fucking toaster in America, this and that. Like, when I hear all of that, that actually tells me that that's a fucking problem. The fact that a country
I was about to say, you're just recognizing, like, 100% on that agreement is that every time I hear somebody make that argument, I'd be like, do you not realize that that means that regardless of your take on tariffs, something should be done because that's a huge issue.
That's a terrible
thing that you just explained. And the idea is that tariffs, whether you believe it'll work or not, is to try to correct that. You're just basically showing me how bad the problem is, not making an argument for or against tariffs, in my opinion. But
100%.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump on that.
Yeah, no, 100%. So, you know, we've got this kind of like fake, thin globalist economy at the moment, which has come about as a result of, I think, excessive free marketism at the cost of social national cohesion, right? Like it's funny, it's got a relationship to the communist sort of ideal, is that you can just imply that everybody is an economic unit. And I've sort of come to, like, I don't know, scratch my head with the Austrian economic stuff here a little bit, is that not all cultures are the same, not all people are the same, not all norms are the same, not like there's such a difference here that if we just look at the praxeological spreadsheet version of people, which is funny enough what communists do, we might think that just making all global trade free and all this sort of stuff is a good idea. But what you end up doing is you end up, I don't know, like turning the world into one big blob of Grey Goo and Starbucks, right? Like it turns everything into sameness. And I don't think that's a good thing. I don't think that's a preferable outcome.
I would check that in the concept that it's like, I actually agree with your entire reasoning there, but that it's a sense of free marketism that's being, unless you just mean it kind of in like the mental, like people think that that's what it is when we're opening up trade networks and all of this stuff, and that everybody just becomes like the same goo, is, I would argue that is actually, again, going back to the structure of our money, it's an issue with the dollar economy and the outflows of wealth from a central location, that like we're becoming all American gooized from a global perspective. Yeah. Yeah. So I agree, but I think that a free market actually means more walls, more like cultures that actually stick to their culture and where you have communities that are strictly their communities. The scale of these things just separate and divide into 1,000 rather than 100. I think it means more explicit competition and more people literally saying, no, this is how we do things here. This is our culture. And you know, we're literally going to put up a fence around our neighborhood and you know, you're not allowed in. Like if people have the choice to segregate, I think they will. People like people who think and talk like them. That's not an evil thing. That's common sense. Even the people who say it's evil will do the exact same thing. They just pretend that they're better than that. And so they think that the assumption of their conversation means that they don't do it, when every single time it comes up in the context is because they are doing it worse than everybody else.
Let me prove this out, because you said you think that they'll do that. No. They do it all the time.
They do exactly that.
Martha's Vineyard. These are some of the most pro-immigration voters in the country, maybe in the history of America. If you go to fucking Martha's Vineyard, don't expect to see a bunch of Mexicans and Haitians and shit like that. Like, that's not what it is. So this is a lie. And I just want to fire back a little bit against what you were saying, Alex, is that like what you're describing is egalitarianism. And I think that, you know, all of the libertarians that I run with are not egalitarian. They fight back against that instinct very heavily. I think what you're really describing is the left-right divide within libertarianism, that there are left libertarians that believe in full open borders and the states of fiction and it doesn't matter. And then there's the right libertarians that say, no, like property rights still matter, even though, yes, the state is a fiction, but the state does own that land, and therefore you have to treat it with the same respect of the voters as if they are kind of a proxy for the ownership of that land, and therefore they do get to dictate who's able to cross that land. You know, so like, I think that that's really the divide you're describing, and it's frustrating because I am constantly on the defensive against these accusations of, you know, being open borders, despite the fact that I'm not, and I've you know, made very adamant claims to the contrary over the past couple of years, because I also recognize that even if you do believe the state's a fiction, this immigration crisis is a product of the state, that you have been robbed to fund it through the NGO networks to the tune of billions of dollars a year, not to mention the fact that it's the United Nations, one of the biggest globalist enterprises in the history of the world, that's responsible for funding and literally orchestrating the invasion from the third world to the first world, not just in America, but also in the UK and all throughout Europe, probably Australia too. And it's like, This is a globalist plot using your money, extracting it against your will, and then flooding you with you know, foreign invaders. There's just no libertarian argument for that. None whatsoever. Sorry, that was just a crazy rant, but I just wanted to make all that point. So
very true. Very true. I think the flooding does also go beyond just you know, sort of third world people and labor and biomass, but it's also like third world shitty fucking plastic products and, you know, consumerism, right? And sure. And I think this is a, you know, we can talk about like the is and the ought and all this kind of stuff, but to sort of tie it back to Guy's earlier thing, it's, there were mistakes made over the last 100 years, with not only around like money printing and, you know, just sort of opening up borders economically and you know, physically speaking and all this sort of stuff, but, you know, it sort of brought us to the point where America's, you know, kind of like hollowed out its industrial base and its productive base. Like it's almost like some blend of a like a degenerate or actually what I should say is like a consumerist fucking heroin junkie, like who just can't get enough of buying shit that they don't need, mixed with a degenerate gambler who has to trade everything and like bet on everything, right? So, you know, and that's why like these days, like everything is financialized. So you kind of like, when you financialize, and this is the, obviously money printing has a big role to play here, is that you print money, everyone uses the American dollar is the reserve currency, you know, they, you know, you get these deficits, you get all this sort of shit. And, you know, America sort of becomes the beneficiary of that in the short term. But the long term, it sort of hollows itself out. And lest that be sort of like reversed in some capacity, which at the moment, honestly, I look at it, I think tariffs are a fucking great way to do that. I don't see actually a more powerful tool right now to like just hit right at the heart of this excessive consumerist behavior. Because when I was speaking to Knut, like I challenged him, I said, okay, so what's the worst case that happens here in this tariff? It's like, hey, everything gets more expensive. I'm like, okay, so what does that mean? It's like, well, you know, people are gonna pay more for the stuff that they buy from overseas. I'm like, okay, so people become less consumerist. I don't see how that's a bad thing. 90% of the shit that people are buying in America is fucking useless anyway. You know, they have enough energy, they have enough food locally. Maybe, you know,
I was about to say, I want to head off. I can already hear somebody saying that you can't eat an iPad. You're just saying everybody should be poor. I agree with actually the logic that you're playing here, because we're not going to have a problem with food. Food's still going to be, we can grow. We have the breadbasket of America. We have better farmland than anybody in the world, basically. Like, food will not be the problem. It will be the cheap crap that's easy to ship from overseas and from China. Like, it's just a bunch of, it is literally just a bunch of like, oh, we have too much money and we're the world reserve currency, so there are foreign premiums basically on the dollar, and so we can just buy all this cheap crap. Every time I need something, I just pop up on Amazon and just order it here the next day.
This is an interesting argument though, and I'd like to actually basically take it from Alex and ask you it directly, Guy, because basically what he's describing is forced austerity. And like, libertarians broadly oppose force. So like we broadly oppose this entire framework, but I do agree.
But austerity.
Yeah, but we do agree with us. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like, how do you have a better option? He said, I can't think of a better option. Can you? And I think both of us would instantly argue, well, you probably have to go back to sound money and like we could list out all these things.
No, going to the idea of like we've poisoned our liver and we're taking a pharmaceutical, is that like, well, whatever problem we're living with, it's probably better to cover up the symptom. But the idea is fix the liver, but that means end the Fed. And if we're not going to end the Fed, then maybe tariffs balance that out. You know, it is something that would hit Wall Street worse than it hits Main Street, because it's not critical things that are being, and when you're looking at the reverse, is the foreign premium on our money is specifically something that benefits Wall Street and Washington, D.C. and destroys the middle class and working classes and the manufacturing base. So like in the context of an artificial imbalance that has done harm, this would technically, I think from an economic game theory perspective, this would be an artificial harm that swung it back in the other way. So I don't think it's entirely a terrible idea, but I don't think it's still not a solution. You know, it's just the whole thing's just a mess.
let me pull on that thread a little bit further. So the you poisoned your liver. I don't think right now fixing the environment and taking the, you know, natural approach of stop poisoning your liver is going to save you, because I think the patient is terminal and they need something.
There's a potential argument there.
I'm telling you, it's like this is actually, you need the pharmaceutical to save your life and kind of come out of the terminal spin and then start living healthy again. In kind of the way that, you know, let's say cancer has got your ass, and as much as we can sit here and bag out like, oh, chemotherapy is bad and all this sort of shit, chemotherapy actually does save people and give them enough of a chance to like, so you kill the fucking cancer and then go and sort out your life and sort out the shit that brought the cancer on in the first place. And the necessity of that is as a result of America having played its cards wrong for the last 50 years and probably longer, right? So I think it's at that point where the, you know, because the ultimate, as we've said, the ultimate solution here is have a hard money and all this sort of stuff. But unfortunately, we don't have that choice. As much as we fucking want to, Bitcoin is just not ready yet. And as much as we want to end the Fed, that's a fucking much bigger problem. You end the Fed, like people are talking about, oh my God, my life's coming to an end, 20% down on the stock market. End the Fed tomorrow, bro. The stock market's 80. Going down 99%. Motherfuckers are going to be jumping out of buildings and shit straight away. So like, no, of the solution, this is like, seems to me the best.
Let me give an analogy for the audience, because I think this will help explain it. Libertarians have this tendency to just say, like, yeah, shit's all fucked. Like, we all agree, shit's all fucked, right? Mm-hmm. But the libertarians have a tendency to go, well, the issue is that you drank for the past 80 years, you know, and you shouldn't have done that. And then Alex is like, okay, but like now their liver is failing and they need a transfusion or they need this or they need that. And the libertarians are like, you shouldn't have fucking drank.
Yeah, pretty
well, you shouldn't have fucking drank.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, you're right. But like, okay, and now what? And I think that's the question of now what? And the answer of like a transplant, which is what Guy and I are prescribing, isn't on offer. You don't have the transplant offer on hand. So now what? And you're basically saying, well, chemo, transfusions, this, that. And yeah, so I just wanted to give an analogy to like understand. A lot of people have frustrations with libertarians.
I think that's a fair relationship. Like I don't see that as an unrepresentative of the situation.
Yeah.
I think there's that. Let me finish what I was saying before in terms of like the worst case and best case. So worst case, as I described earlier, is like, oh shit, okay, fucking iPads cost $10,000 now apparently. Which FYI for anyone who thinks that shit, they're fucking morons, because Apple has a big margin. And guess where that margin is going? To Wall Street. So like worst case here is like Apple loses some margin and they will sell the phones at the same fucking rate, right? And the best case scenario here that could happen is that you get some austerity, we limit some of the mindless, stupid consumerism. In fact, Bitcoiners talk about this. When we talk about deflationary money, we say the bar will be raised higher as to what sort of products and services we purchased. So this
if we went to a sound money standard, this would actually happen. Like some kind of this similar consequence would be
exactly
Yeah, sorry.
Exactly. So this is a way for us to get that before the sound money is ready, right? Because it's not ready. It's still baking. It's still in the oven. So you get that. The best case scenario, actually, and this is very, very important for America, in my opinion, is that you open the opportunity. Like, if we are going to argue that humans react to incentives, by doing this, and by, let's say, if Trump also follows through with abolishing, internal regulations and internal taxation regimes and everything, if he does that, bro, he fucking opens up the innovative capacity of his own people and gives them an advantage. And it's not the consumers, he gives the producers an advantage, because then if you're a producer and you're thinking about America and you're like, bro, I'll fucking just build here, I'll innovate here, I'll create here. So the best case scenario is that you divert, you create a problem. Yes, things go up in price. But you, again, the Austrian argument is that praxeologically speaking, people will adapt to an incentive, and the incentive here changes. And this isn't, like I said at the beginning, this isn't El Salvador with 5 million people where the average IQ is 60. Like, you're talking about America with very high average IQ, the most innovative part of the fucking world. I don't care. Like, the concept of a modern entrepreneur comes from America. I'm not even American, and I'm here kissing both your asses. Like, Americans are the most...
Thank you. We are pretty great.
As you should be.
Seriously, you motherfuckers are like, all of this shit, we're talking on microphones and internet and all this sort of shit came from America. If America can't fucking figure out how to build shit themselves, we got a bigger problem. So, and honestly, agreed. If we continue down this path for another 5 or 10 years, I think all the people who know how to do anything are going to fucking die anyway, or they're going to be broken, all this sort of shit. So then America will be up shit creek. So I feel like this is such a necessary, like, dirty medicine that we got to take. And particularly for America, because it also, like, this is, again, you know, I'm a bit of a Trump fanboy, I think, because I just love the fact that this guy just comes in and just, like, literally just shakes a bunch of shit and everyone fucking loses their mind.
It is entertaining. It is entertaining.
It is so good. It is the troll of the century. But he comes in, shakes a bunch of shit up by creating an advantage for America and sort of, like, moving America towards our nation first. He's actually going to force other nations to do the same for themselves. And it's going to create more of a multipolar world. It's going to create these, what we discussed earlier, Guy, about, like, having, you know, nations kind of respect their own enclaves a little bit further and be like, you know what, we're going to take care of our own. So we get more walls, we get more real diversity, people giving a shit about themselves first more than anything else. In spite of Trump, that's the whole fucking beauty of this thing. He is the reason they're like, oh, yeah, you know what? Fuck you. We're also going to be more nationalist. It's like, yes, this is exactly so true. What we want.
I got to point this out, because just yesterday there was this viral video in Canada where the strawberries from U.S. production were half the cost of the Canadian-produced strawberries, and the Canadian-produced strawberries were gone, and the U.S.-produced strawberries, which were cheaper, they were all still sitting there because the Canadians are so, you know, enraged and now embracing nationalism that they are buying Canadian produced goods. And I just thought that was this is such a perfect example of what you're describing, is that these are like the ultimate globalist open border psychopaths. And they're like, fuck that. We're all about Canadian production. We're nationalists hard as hell. What you just said is so true.
He's fucking fried all their brains, and that's why I love it, because it's like it's literally deforming them in real time, and they don't know what the fuck to do with themselves. And the result of all of this, honestly, I think takes us to a Bitcoin standard much faster, because it's going to start getting nation states, it's going to start getting everybody thinking about themselves more. And while you're thinking about yourself, and while you're thinking about how do I get back at the US and the US dollar and everything like that, guess what alternative there exists? Oh, wait a minute, there's a thing called Bitcoin. You know what? We should start stacking some of that shit because this asshole fucking Trump is doing it. So, like, it literally, by getting the whole fucking global economy and then playing, like, he is a master, like, people think he's a chess player. He's not. He's a fucking poker player. The guy's brilliant he sits down, he sees the hand that America has been dealt, which, as I described earlier, 350 million people, largest landmass, innovation, it's got all the fucking money, it's the consumer base of the world, like, it's got all of that, and he's actually playing it hard, and he's got the fucking chips, so he's now, like, going all in every single time, and motherfuckers are folding left, right, and center. Like, that's the way the hand needs to be played.
I got to interject because my episode that aired just a few hours ago, which people will watch that and then they'll watch this. The exact analogy I made is that, in poker, you have to know who has the chips, who has the cards. Basically, Trump's sitting down at the table with $1 trillion of chips and everybody else is sitting down with a couple thousand and he's just like all in every hand, all in every hand. And he can lose, he can afford to lose hands for fucking days because he's just got such an advantageous position.
Yeah. Totally. And this is the tragedy of what's happened with America, particularly in the last 20 years, as the sort of the Democratic left and the retard neocons sort of have been running the show, is that they've played the hand so fucking poorly. They've played it like retards, that they've weakened every single element of the US. And now who's paying for it? It's Main Street, because these idiots are like, oh, fuck. All right, let's just import third worlders. Let's just fucking import cheap goods and let's print a bunch of fucking money and let's just burn this bitch while we still can. We got 5 years left. Let's do it. I'm kind of like literally by 2 millimeters. And this is I end this essay on this. It's like, trust the fucking plan. Like, God somehow, you know, blew the bullet like 2 millimeters and like put us in an ultimate dimension. Like, we should have been, you know, we should have been Klaus Schwab eating bugs, like all this sort of shit by now. And somehow, by a fucking fraction of a microsecond, looking at some chick's tits on the other side, whatever he was doing, like, missed the goddamn fucking bullet. And here we are playing poker on the world stage. And
it's slowly even more poetic.
More nationalism. It's incredible.
It's even more poetic. He was looking at a chart of immigration, of illegal immigration. So
there you go. Even better.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally true. That's what he was looking at, was when he turned his head to look at that chart and the bullet grazed his ear as a consequence of that. So that's the only reason he's alive, is because he's against immigration. So that tells you something, I guess, if you believe in God. My goodness.
Dude, I have such a hard time letting myself get any hope about this, because
I know,
it seems ridiculous. But one of the things you actually started out with, that line of thinking, was that if you could swap it with a different, if you could push from internal taxation to external taxation, basically make a trade, and then openly talking about the idea of getting rid of the income tax, I will take 100% tariffs everywhere if you get rid of the fucking income tax. The income tax is so horrifically poisonous. Tariffs all day over the income tax. My problem is that I think we have tariffs and the income tax at the end of this. So I am not going to let myself get my hopes up there. Now, I will say there is a tiny, tiny little bit of optimistic guy like that really wants this to happen and thinks and goes and looks at the map and sees Gulf of America and thinks, maybe it actually can happen, but it's really hard to go there. I'm older than I used to be.
let's instead of just dealing with our own jaded nature, which is justifiable, I might add, let's just do it on math. How the fuck do you maintain the federal spending off of a tariff-based income for the federal government? Like, I don't think you can do it. I mean, they're spending $6 to $7 trillion annually. I do not think, based
off
of,
cut too much.
Yeah, you'd have to cut federal spending, and then simultaneously, just to kind of pour water on Svetsky here, you know, Trump pushed the only reason the continuing resolution got pushed through, which continued the spending levels of the Biden administration, was because Trump demanded it. And he also called for Thomas Massie to be primaried, because Massie was like, I'm not going to continue the spending of the Biden administration. This is bankrupting us. So there's really significant mixed messages. Now, I will try and give Trump his due and say, look, maybe his plan is, I need to have this same level of spending because I'm making dramatic swings here, and I can't deal with mass layoffs of federal employees, all of the economic damage that creates, plus this tariff battle, which is going to create a downward pressure on the stock market, plus this, plus that, plus this, plus that. So I need this cushion for the next 10 months, and I do intend to actually cut federal spending dramatically and migrate away from the income tax to a tariff-based income. Like, but these are all such dramatic swings. It's just like you have to be so optimistic to think that all these things are going to happen. And it sounds as if you are.
I think there's optimism and there's also patience. I think it's very like we have been so our relationship to time has been so warped over the last 5 years, like that we've been locked inside and now we're all on social media and everything. Like, you know, I think we forget that Trump's been in power for like, what, less than 3 months? That's not a lot of time. Like, it's literally not a lot of time. And these sorts of changes, like to bring in tariffs, to figure out, like, first of all, you got to play chicken with everyone. You got to figure out who's your ally, who's not your ally. You've got to like go and shake up things first, right? Before you decide who you actually will apply tariffs to, like who is actually a bad actor, who is an adversary and who is an ally. And I think this first stage is figuring that out. And, you know, you figure out, okay, fucking China, my adversary or not, because I can guarantee you China's an adversary and they care more about China than they care about America, you know, hands down. So you kind of figure that shit out first. Then you know where you actually stand with the tariff thing. And then you can actually figure out, okay, are we going to bring money in from tariffs or not? Then what do we do? Then you can move to the next stage, which is figuring out what to do with the internal taxation. And then that, maybe that is looks like abolishing the income tax, or maybe that looks like some sort of lowering of the income tax and making it 10% across the board. I don't know what the, you know, the machinations there are, but it's a fucking giant job. Like, and it sort of has to be taken in stages. And honestly, to turn around a shitstorm the size of what the US has become, which has so many entrenched powers that don't want to see this happen, whether it's Wall Street, whether it's the central banks, whether it's the fucking deep state and all this sort of shit, to try and like navigate all of that and to do it in like 6 months, which is what every libertarian wants it to happen, it's fucking fantasy land. Like, if he is, after 4 years, able to sort this shit out and drop the income tax, or, you know, like if that was the one thing he did in the 4 years, alongside releasing Ross, this would be a massive win. But my, like, I think, you know, he, at least from what I've seen now, like the way he's approached this versus his first term is night and day. Like, there's not even, you know, the first term he sort of came in, I sort of envision as like a, as an entrepreneur who's used to, you run a business, you tell people what to do and shit gets done. He comes into this sort of swamp, is like, I know what we're doing, tells people something, and then the opposite fucking happens and people backstabbing and all this sort of shit, and then he gets fucking thrown out of things. So he's sort of come back this time with better team, better understanding of what to do, and taking like a blitzkrieg approach, which I think is absolutely necessary. And, you know, I am definitely more optimistic, but I'm also forcing myself to be a little bit more patient in these things, recognizing that this is going to take some time. Like, the most important thing is he's actually opened up the discussion about abolishing the income tax. Let that seed fucking spread. People are going to at some point normalize that, in the same way as we started normalizing the discussion about let's change the fucking immigration laws, let's change this, let's change that. We've started talking about all these things which were complete taboo. Like, 2 years ago, no fucking body other than three libertarians, you know, us three idiots on this call, were talking about abolishing the income tax. Like, fucking nobody. Now, normal people are talking about, shit, we could maybe abolish the income tax. Like,
President Trump said it on Joe Rogan. I mean, it's the biggest platform that you can possibly say that message. Believe me, I voted for Trump. So I was persuaded that there was at least a you know, a puncher's chance going with this guy, that like he could create, you know, dramatic changes that are to our benefit. Here's the thing, like, if he wants to buy additional patience from people like me, which, you know, he doesn't have to if he doesn't want to, but here's how you get me, Trump. Give me the fucking Epstein client list. Give me that. Start to actually demonstrate that you're prosecuting some of the most corrupt, evil people. How about you actually open up investigations into Fauci, because you've said that the pardons were signed with AutoPen and therefore blah, blah, blah. Why is RFK talking about anti-Semitism when he ought to be talking about the bioweapon that was funded by, you know, your guy? Like, these are conflicts in the messaging that give me pause as to his legitimacy.
Yeah.
They are. I have no response to that other than these things are hard and complicated. And I guess it's a game of, I can imagine the people that are behind these things also carry a little, you know, quite a lot of power and quite a lot of influence. And maybe you need to build up a certain amount of power or momentum or something before you can go and steamroll someone. So it's like a,
of course, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know how much of that stuff.
And let me,
yeah,
let me
my steel man is, I completely agree. Like, I am in Clint's camp for how I feel about all of that stuff. But my steel man, when I'm arguing with myself about it, is if they actually want to take a case to court and they want to win, they want to smash it, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to the controversy around all of this stuff. They want to absolutely win, like, not like a sort of win, a you are so lost, like embarrassingly.
I think that the
and that would take time. That's my steel man. When I,
yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think that the key thing to kind of reframe people's mentality is, like, they say, like, if you come at the king, you best not miss. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think mm-hmm. Trump's the king. I don't think Trump's the king, like, not in this fight. And I think, like, there's a lot of other, you know, equally or even more powerful people that you may not even know the name of that actually do run shit in a way that's extraordinarily powerful. And he's up against a whole bunch of them, assuming that our best impressions of Trump are legit mm-hmm. and that he's actually mm-hmm. fighting on our behalf. Well, he's up against the most, you know, deeply entrenched powers, interests that have ever existed. I mean, like, really, really big time stuff. And the truth is, he's probably in bed with some of the deeply entrenched, mm-hmm. powerful interests mm-hmm. too. Because mm-hmm. the only way you have a chance of winning this fight is you have to take some entrenched, powerful interests and wage war with their assets and their media influence operations and everything else. Because you can't just go after these people, you know, full speed without allies. So to add to your claim here, Alex, is that, like, what he did yesterday was he dropped. He said, do not respond to my tariffs. No reciprocity. Who did he get reciprocity from? Well, China was the only one that actually increased above mm-hmm. what we increased, like, or I think it was above. And then he fired back at 104%, which is fucking insane. But but the other nations that also responded were Canada, the EU, and I think Mexico. So those were the four nations. So your point about, like, I have to figure out who my allies are. Well, he just loyalty tested the whole world, and he just mm-hmm. found out Canada, mm-hmm. Mexico, the EU, and China. Those are the four big blocks that are actually against us. So now he can actually reorient his tactics. I just wanted to point that out.
No, it's very true. I think these games are very complex, and, you know, he's got a very, I mean, the approach is both hilarious and it's very effective, which is come in raging bull, shake everything up, play all fucking in, like, play poker hard, which is what we were basically saying before. And basically just, like, dislodge, because I think this is also the swamp metaphor, or, you know, the word entrenched, that metaphor here is very important, is that things are so entrenched, the only way to entrench them is to shake shit up by doing stuff that seems on the surface extremely extreme, which this is. Like, there was a funny meme that's in the essay that I just published, which it's kind of like leftists trying to make fun of the Trump supporters and the MAGA, where it's like, you know, he says, I'm adding tariffs, and then it's got like a MAGA NPC saying, oh, this will create jobs, and then he's like, I'm pausing tariffs, and it's like, oh, it's out of the deal. I'm adding tariffs. Oh, it's going to raise jobs. I'm pausing tariffs. Oh, it's the art of the deal. So it's like making fun of, like, the MAGA people. But to some degree, that's true of everybody, because as much as the nature of poker is that there's an element of luck and there's an element of chaos in it as well. So, you know, people come in that are good players, and we can sit here and pontificate all we want about what's happening, but we actually don't know how any of this is going to play out. But the fact that it is playing out, in my opinion, is a very good thing, because you need to shake up the order. Like, the situation has become stale. Like, it became like a really bad game.
I think it's better than where status quo was taking us. Like, I don't think people realize how close to a cliff And I still think we're kind of headed in the direction of the cliff, but the course is doing this now. So we're not straight gas on the pedal towards that direction. There is movement, which if we ever hope that a turn is going to be in our future, we need to not be barreling straight down in one direction. So I kind of agree that just causing chaos so that people have to work out, like actually think about how anything works and reconsider why we are making decisions, causing chaos is a better alternative because it forces that. It forces a perspective on what's going on.
But I also think that the key thing here is that you can't, and I keep telling his supporters this, because when the market was tanking, a lot of them were celebrating, saying, look, we never were able to fucking afford a house. I had to work three jobs. I'm struggling to stay alive. I don't have a fucking wife. I don't have kids, no picket fence, no future, no pension, no this, that. So fuck you, you boomer piece of shit. You ruined my life. I'm like, there's this vengeance element within the populist MAGA, particularly the Zoomer and millennial class, that I'm very sympathetic to. Like I totally understand the anger. So let me be very clear about that. But also, that energy is not productive. Like that is basically cut off your nose to spite your face, destroy everything because I have nothing type of mentality. That is a kind of a communist revolution as opposed to a liberty oriented revolution. And I'm very nervous about how that energy is funneled. And I think that Trump coming in as a chaos agent and just shaking shit up and then not leading to, you know, productive gains and increased industrial capacity. But like if he doesn't do that, well, then he's just a chaos agent alongside his supporters who want to watch the world burn. Like, I want to save this country, you know? So I hope that he has a vision. I hope he has a plan, and I hope he can deliver on it. And I hope it's to the benefit of, you know, this country, to his supporters, everybody. And it's just, I don't want to green light chaos for the sake of chaos is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Let me riff on that for a second. Because I think that's you make a very good point there about the energy where some of that stuff comes from and then the chaos. So it's very easy in a world where we're sort of desensitized with social media and like wars happen on our phone these days, and you know, we're all sort of like, you know, really desensitized. The only time we're really affected is if our portfolios go down and everyone fucking freaks the hell out because, you know, we lost 10 grand or 20 grand or whatever, right? So the reality, the fact is the world is at war. And I think this is very easy to forget. We got a war on Twitter for fuck's sake, but you know, there's wars happening at many, many different levels. And in my opinion, modern warfare is waged in a political and economic sort of frame these days. It's not as kinetic as it used to be. And I think we should be glad about this because
it's network based.
Yes. All of that. But I guess where I'm going with this is, one, Trump is a chaos agent. Yes. I think he's a very measured chaos agent, as we've described. Like, there's probably other measures that could have been taken, but I think this, the way he's approached the tariffs, the way he's like testing people, the way he's playing and everything, I think is actually very intelligent chaos creation. So there's definitely evidence to that. But for me, the most important war, the thing that we are fighting for in the world today, more than anything else, for me, is the spirit of the West. And the spirit of the West has been under attack by globalists, by fucking adversaries of all kinds, like the trader merchant, I shouldn't call it the merchant class, the trader parasite money changer class, right? That class, whoever the fuck that is, has been looking to destroy the productive spirit and soul of the West in any way that it can, weaponizing everything from Chinese to fucking Indians to central banks to everything, right? And if that war can be fought without dropping fucking bombs and fought in a non-kinetic manner through economic means, that is the win of fucking wins in the history of humanity. Like, and this is where, again, like I
mean, that's what we talk about with where Bitcoin is taking us, right? Is that it limits the kinetic, it actually puts costs in the right place, which means that everything comes back to an economic war as controlling where the costs go. And if you can actually separate the medium from the politics, and I think this is a lot of what we have going on, why I mentioned networks, is I think what we're seeing is there's an identity problem and there is a political problem. So you're seeing political networks fight each other with their monetary walls, but then you're also seeing this cultural separation because internet networks are fighting television networks. Like, you're seeing literally a buildup of narrative and worldview that is separate depending on where you, like, which network is your mm-hmm. dominant network. Mm-hmm. And so you have kind of like this up like top to bottom network battles, because we have communication platforms and communication networks that never existed before, and we can build our own opinion and then yell up at the top. And then the political networks are fighting each other at the exact same time. And the one of the big monetary networks right now is kind of in an unstable position. Is it about to shrink heavily? Is it about to grow? You know, so I mean, like you said, there's war. Is I think we have war at every level because everything has changed. Nothing is static anymore. Nothing is untouched now, from the internet, from the digital age, from the AI age, from the Bitcoin age. Like, every layer right now is in what the hell's going to happen in 10 years, because nothing is stable anymore.
But the question is, can all of these kind of soft power wars, and some of it's kinetic, obviously,
there's some
Israel, Palestine, Russia, Ukraine. Like, there's a lot of people dying, so I don't want to downplay that.
To some degree, there's got to be kinetic, you know. From
but can we keep it? Can we keep it kinetic to the point that it's not existential? And that's the question that I have. Is like, this is why I definitely the biggest reason I voted for Trump is because he was the only guy that was on offer that was like, I'm going to negotiate peace with Russia. And I was like,
yeah, the nuclear war wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable. Like, that's an unpopular opinion.
Well, from the libertarian camp, they were furious with me because they're like, choosing the better of two evils, blah, blah, blah. It still gets you evil. It's like, dude, if we all die, none of this fucking matters. Okay. Yeah. So like,
the enemy of progress. Like, that kind of retardation drives me crazy.
I did want to point out one other thing, because you're talking about the you know, different wars at all these different levels, and how it's information war, it's internet war, it's communication war, it's network war. Like, the other thing that people need to be privy to, and this is kind of a tangent, so you don't feel like you need to, you know, add on to this particular and just take it wherever you want afterwards. But like, there's big controversy yesterday because Tim Pool met with Netanyahu in private, kind of in private. And like, there are attempts to infiltrate the independent media space, buy us out, who knows, blackmail us. I don't know what the fuck's next, but like, as our influence increases, it's only going to get more aggressive. And as the circumstances become more existential for the powers that be, like, they're going to take the gloves off. And I think that the civil litigation against Alex Jones, I think that the rape charges that seem like BS, but maybe they're not, I don't know, with Russell Brand, Tate Brothers, shit like that. Like, there's going to be increasingly hard power, to the point that, like, you could see assassinations of independent, you know, communicators that have some of these biggest audiences. Like Rogan, for instance, like, he's really in danger. And I don't know that people will probably laugh me off at saying this, but like, the fact that he has on, you know, the Dave Smiths of the world and all these other dissident people to talk to 10 to 15 million people is so damaging. It's so fucking damaging to the establishment that, like, there's just no way that they would not prefer this guy not to be around anymore. So sorry, that was just a random tangent, but I just want people to be aware, like, if you are in this space with us, like, they're going to be trying to undermine you. They're going to be trying to buy you out, to blackmail, to do all these things. So it's going to take, like, really principled, high character people to survive and thrive in this world. Sorry for the random tangent.
That, and with a bit of luck, if they've got tariffs to worry about, then it takes the heat off us.
There you go.
It's like cover. But I mean, look, my yeah, I get that. I'm not gonna riff any more on that because I think the point is the point that you've made, and that is part of the kind of warfare that we have entered. And I mean, my whole book that I just wrote and that guy just read is, you know, talks about this. Like, it opens, the opening quote is, "It's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war." And that, yeah, like, my book has a lot about war in there. And it's not because I think that we need to go and fucking start stabbing each other and all this sort of stuff. That's not, like, I'm not a warmonger. And I think
he says that explicitly in the book.
Exactly. Chapter four. You know, people sort of sometimes get me wrong there. They're like, oh, you know, and you just want to see people go to war and all this sort of stuff. It's not the case. I think the people who are most appreciative of the virtues of war are the ones who are least for going to war, because they know that they've actually been exposed to the damage and to the bloodshed that it can create. And that's why most of the time when you see warmongers, they're the people who will not fucking bleed. They're the ones who actually find a way to profit from it. So they just want a bunch of fucking people to go and die for them. And for me, once again, I really credit what Trump is doing here. Is like, in World War II, you know, there was a kinetic war that was an attempt to fight for the soul of the West, right? And I'm not going to go into what happened there, but, you know, something strange happened. Now, you know, the soul of the West is, you know, there is an attempt to bury it again. And it could well turn into a kinetic war, or it could be an economic war. And I think this is the best way to wage modern warfare, honestly. Like, if the result of this war is that we have to pay $500 extra for a fucking iPhone or whatever the case is, beautiful. Mwah. Like, that is an excellent outcome. If the goal here is to preserve the ethnos, the culture of the West, the people of the West, and start to rebuild the local domestic economy, as I sort of mentioned before. Like, there's a, in the essay, I've got this analogy about building a cathedral, right? And, you know, Europe is full of these beautiful cathedrals that made absolutely no fucking economic sense to build. Like, if a accountant or economist sat there and looked at it, they'd be like, why the fuck would you build this thing? It wasn't economic. It was about expressing the beauty and the grandeur of what the West represented, the values, you know, the spirit of its people. And I think there comes a point in a society when it needs to, like, pure, like, measuring everything off the back of pure economics and making that your one and only rationale, you will trade culture, nuance, like, beauty, you will trade a bunch of that stuff, because oftentimes doing what is economically expedient, like for profit or for bottom line or for margin, then this has been very hard for me to come to terms with, being an Austrian economist and libertarian for so long. But sometimes you do that and you turn your neighborhood into fucking Legoland instead of, you know, the center of Milan where you've got this beautiful cathedral and stuff like that. Sometimes the economically expedient thing is not the right thing to do. It is the right thing to do to take your money and to invest it in creating something beautiful, or creating, you know, doing something for your people. Like, it's a reinvestment in yourself. And that's actually a lower time preference behavior, because you're coming back to the cathedral, you're building the cathedral for the people of the future. 300 years from now, you're going to fucking die well before the cathedral is built, but you're doing it not for economic reasons, but for a higher spiritual, you know, reason, whatever you want to sort of frame that as. And I think for, you know, libertarianism, Austrian economics, free markets, all these sort of principles don't just appear in a vacuum. You know, they came out of the West. They came out of the high period of Europe and America for a reason. And if we destroy Europe and America for the goal of GDP go up and free fucking markets, tomorrow the future generations won't have a fucking free market. If you make America India, for example, there's no fucking free market libertarianism or any of that sort of shit is not going to work there. So to me, this is very important. I think this is a price. It's an economic price to be paid. And then this is how I view this whole thing at the moment. There's an economic price to be made. There is going to be things that seem economically insane to be done, but that will strengthen the roots and the soul and the productive base of America and its people, which will pay dividends 5, 6, 10 generations from now, when America is still America, and hasn't become like Canada's become fucking India at the moment. So that to me is very important. So I kind of want to throw that out.
No, I think that's a very fair argument, and it's one that I've made, or it mirrors my own when it comes to immigration. You know, like a lot of libertarians still are ride or die open borders. And I'm just like, look, guys, we are being conquered on two fronts ideologically. You have academia, which is spitting out Marxists as fast as it possibly can. And then you have immigrants that come in, which, yes, some of them are very much still with the ethos of Americanism and freedom and free markets and everything else. But the majority are not. So how are you going to expect to have America still if you have this dual pronged attack that is converting Americans into Marxists and also bringing in, non-American, thinkers? And it's just like, you're not going to win. You're not going to win that fight. So you got to pick and choose how you're going to take this battle on. I'm curious what you think, Guy.
Yeah, I think the whole libertarian means completely open borders take is making the same logical mistake as the, because you have the freedom to speak, you're not allowed to say anything wrong. You're not allowed to like be mad about somebody's opinion or say that they're stupid. You know, like you're supposed to just like if I think weed should be legal, that means I have to like weed, you know, like, or I have to like cocaine because I don't think you should be put in a cage about it. Like that, I think, is the logical disconnect when it comes to immigration for libertarians, is that like the fact that we think that like there should be a degree of freedom of human movement doesn't mean that I don't own my property and I can't put a fence around it, and that we can't own this area together and we can decide whether or not we want to put a fence around that. You know, like it's not, they are not exactly the same thing, and cultures are a thing. And I don't actually have not had the interesting point that you bring up, Svetsky, is about like as an Austrian or Austrian leaning, you kind of had an issue when it came to the separation of economics versus culture, or doing things that are not economic. And I think that's actually a conflation of two things. It's the difference between economics, the science, and economizing, the verb, is that the science, or the idea of understanding the organics of free markets, is actually about setting up stable rule systems for property and for money so that the human values can be the focus. Because only if the rules are not being played with, just like if you can play the ref and you can change the rules of football in the middle of football, you're not playing football anymore. You're literally vying to see which ref can give free points to the other team because their shirts are blue and the sun is glaring, and so like they get a free touchdown. Like that becomes the game. So if you have a hard set of rules for the game, and you have a hard set of this is exactly what the referee has to adhere to, and that is strong, now you're playing football, and the team that wins is the team that plays a beautiful game of football. That is what free markets do, is that they open up the fact that we can now think about what we value as humans, rather than fight over who gets to control the thing that prints more points. And then we become this society of like more point is better, and that's it. That's all it is. We're trading, we're speculating. OnlyFans pays more than a mom, you know, like,
yeah. This argument, I know I've been making the exact same argument to people for
I just want to drop a shout out because he brought up his book. I absolutely love this book, and the whole stuff about war is way more nuanced than I had thought. And it has been, I have not done nothing but think about it. Like I've literally walked away from the book and then been thinking about it. And then I come back to try to like record a little bit on the book, and I don't completely agree with it, but it's a fascinating read. I'm really loving it. Fetsky, you killed it with this one.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. I think I want to, so I agree with what you said about the economizing and, you know, economics, and I get that. Where I was sort of mentioning before is you need some sort of crucible or structure or framework to, you know, like you need something to allow for that game to be played, right? And to be played as best as possible. And I think my hypothesis here is that there's a reason why the culture of early America and, you know, high Europe and all this sort of stuff fostered that versus why the culture of, and again, you know, it sounds like I'm picking on Africa, China and all this sort of stuff here, but they have different cultures. They didn't foster that. It's very different. And the reality of the fact is that, you know, what sort of Clint said earlier is that, you know, I mean, immigration is one issue here, and whether it's legal or illegal immigration, both of them are a challenge because when you start to change the numbers of people and the voters and who has power and all this sort of stuff, and you start to mix all the interests, you get a situation where the framework or that crucible that enables you to have free market economics, particularly locally, I think free market economics has to happen within some sort of protected bound. You start to undermine that. So I think that's one thing I want to say there. Secondly, is as much as we want to believe that every single territory can just trade with each other and be friendly and all of that sort of stuff, I think it's naive because there are adversaries, like Americans fight against Americans, let alone Americans against whatever, right? So there's adversaries at multiple levels. And trade is not just a tool for making money, but trade is a tool for, competing with that who is your adversary. And this is where I sort of have come to reconcile tariffs in some capacities. It's not as simple as taxation is theft, tariffs are bad. You know, that's a very simplistic view. It's almost an NPC view, because you might have someone who is an adversary, and let's just use China in this example, is like China loves the fact that they can sell shit to America, sell useless shit, and actually pull in money from America, strengthen their industrial base, and plan for 1,000 years while America is sort of like being a junkie and, you know, just like consuming shit they don't need. Like, they fucking love that. And if you can sort of wake up from that and realize that you're actually the buyer, so you actually provide the demand, and you actually can potentially buy from family instead of the stranger or the adversary down the road, you might, even though it's economically, incorrect in the beginning because it costs more and all this sort of stuff, like, you might do that because the reality of the fact that of the world is that there are adversaries, and at the geopolitical level,
basically, you know, this is a time preference. This is a time preference argument.
Yes,
you're essentially saying that, yeah, sure, you can get the cheaper iPad today, but what about tomorrow? You know, what about 10 years from now? What does your country look like? It's a very interesting debate, and I just wanted to point out, because I lit Gillespie on fire for this tweet, but he. And this ties in perfectly to what you guys were talking about. Nick Gillespie posts this chart of, I guess, his stock. I don't even know. There's no fucking X and Y axis, so I don't know how much it's down. But he says, I'm 61, and over the past 2 months, my 401k has lost 25% of its value. I'm always happy to contribute to the greater good, but can someone please explain to me how this helps anyone? And it's just like, well, first off, you're 61. Why are you still in growth stocks? Why are you taking a full maximal hit of 25% loss as you're like on the cusp of retirement? That's fucking bizarre. Not on top of that, you're a libertarian who has advocated and strongly railed against the tariff regime, which, by the way, Trump campaigned on for the past fucking year and basically his entire life that he was going to roll this out. You should have known that the market was going to get hit. Why didn't you hedge? Why didn't you go to money markets? Why didn't you fucking change your risk exposure? You didn't do any of that. You have no fucking sense of personal responsibility in any of this. You're just a fucking, like, a total NPC. All of my life savings is just invest in this market. And all of your, you know, lectures that you give to the world is that you understand this shit better than anybody, and this is why you're able to advise. Well, clearly you're not living that way, so I don't fucking take you seriously anymore. Sorry for, like, this crazy rant, but, like,
I just
really think that it's, like, reprehensible to just post that chart and just cry. It's like...
Yeah, man, when I see this stuff... Yeah, when I see this stuff, I want to go down another 80%, because like when I see people whose like entire economic or entire financial, I should say, philosophy is that shit should just go up and to the fucking right. Like, I just want to see it all fucking like, see you later. Just like burn it to the fucking ground, because
and every single libertarian knows that this market is a house of cards, that it's built exactly off of bullshit. So like when it drops, you can't act surprised or hurt or caught off guard. Like, what are you doing? So I don't know. I just think it really was indicative of kind of the blue-pilled libertarian mindset, where like they read the books, they lecture well, they give you the 101 answers to everything, but they live like fucking idiots. Like, they're not actually applying our worldview to anything. Because if you are, that didn't happen to you. Sorry. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all I got to say about it. Fuck you, Nicholas.
No, I think that's like 1,000% fair point on that. And it seems like really, like when it comes to the whole stock stuff, is that like if we ever took, like if you move to a sound money standard, that's what's going to happen. Like the financial and stock market
exactly, dude,
is so bloated. Like, it would fall by probably 60% in capital
fast
that is applied towards that system. Like, it's so bloated. Yeah. Like, normal people wouldn't invest in it.
But it would
make no sense, because it's not going to just go up 7% every single year, which is literally because of the money printer.
Nick and company would still advocate for ending the Fed, and they would expect that. I mean,
the stock market would go up somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But my point is, like, you just cannot base your analysis off of number go up, number go down. Like, this is much more complicated, and any libertarian worth anything understands that. And I think that was my big frustration with it. It's just such a basic bitch, whiny, total lack of personal responsibility mentality. And it's like, no one should listen to you after that. Like, you shouldn't be taken seriously if that's your fucking worldview. And you knew this was coming, and you just kept long all the way long. You lost 25%. Jesus Christ. Sorry. I got to stop ranting about this guy. I don't know why that bothers me so much, but it really does.
I will tell you everything about like my faith or expectations with this. I will say, if there's a subset of things that if you wanted the US to basically take every chip on the table, you did the tariffs, you got rid of the income tax, you supported stable coins with no KYC, and you bought Bitcoin, and you went hard into having a domestic tech sector, like really fleshing that out and moving manufacturing on board, the US would have every one of the chips. Like, if they actually do that, like, I don't think getting rid of the income tax would be such like a multi-generational profound unlock of
and it would alter building, innovating.
It would be unheard of.
And it would alter our time preference sickness in such a dramatic way.
Yeah. I think of all of them, the income tax is the most important, more important than Bitcoin, honestly, in my opinion, because I just don't think we need to, I don't think it's reasonable to even think that the current regime, I think Bitcoin becomes something long after Trump's dead. So, you know, ideally, like, the best thing for America would be that Trump becomes king and he doesn't like get removed until he dies. So he's in there for another fucking 15 years, and that gives it enough time to just change things, and because these things take time, and in that time, as you said, he, you know, keeps tariffs with the adversaries and no tariffs with his friends. You know, that's perfectly sound, reasonable behavior. You abolish all the income tax and all the local regulations, because it's not just income taxes that are internal, but there's a bunch of other shit that is in the way of people being able to innovate domestically. So you want to like remove and cut away as much of that shit as possible.
Shatter the regulatory state. My God, dude. Yep. He does that. And even if he doesn't get rid of the income tax, but he drops it, say people making less than $500,000, if he could get rid of it for those people, like just to reinstill a belief that like you can be middle class, you can actually have a family, you can get married, you can have kids, you can survive. Mm-hmm. Like that is, in my opinion, as big a threat to this country as our national debt. Like the fact that people are hopeless, the fact that young men are hopeless. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't fucking fix that, well, then just prepare for revolution, because it's coming. And I think that's where we're at. And like, you got to take some dramatic swings. And this is why I've been willing to accept some unlibertarian maneuvers, because I understand, like, we are on the precipice of really dire things.
Totally. So that was, you know, my point is basically, I think the Bitcoin win is a longer term win. And I think it's something that occurs when Bitcoin naturally reaches something like 1 to 10 million, somewhere in that range, probably closer to the 10 million mark, I don't think it can be done artificially. So I think from an investment perspective,
if you onshored that wealth, the wealth unlock it would have for the middle class would be huge. But I completely agree. It's 20 years for the unlock of what Bitcoin actually does and the fundamental thing that Bitcoin solves. Because actually in the talk I did at BitBlock Boom, I was trying to illustrate this, is how far we are away from what Bitcoin does, and that the problem is not in the retail and e-commerce world.
The huge problem is just not there.
I'm a cypherpunk through and through. I want peer-to-peer payments for everybody, all that good stuff. And that is 1,000% the end goal. But the problem is the $2.7 quadrillion in exchange that is nothing but printed loan, buying corporation, buying land, buying property, like everything under the sun that happens in SWIFT. And you do not go from $3.4 trillion in settled value on Bitcoin today to $2,700 trillion in 2 years.
Exactly.
Like, that's what we're talking about. So yes, that is a 20-year timeline. That is a 40-year timeline, realistically, 20-year at best, you know?
Yeah. So that's why I think, like, right now, I guess it all comes back to why I'm, you know, pro this approach. Like, worst case, this is, you know, a bunch of brinksmanship, whatever, you know, and we end up, like, figuring out who allies are, who's not an ally, blah, 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 and all that sort of stuff. You know, best case, this, you know, opens the door towards removing IRS income tax, or lowering it and then cleaning up the local domestic and all this sort of stuff. But overall, like, directionally, to me, this is like, I couldn't think of a more accurate direction. And this is why, like, if there's Bitcoin is listening to this, you know, the tired argument, or I mean, it's tired argument to me, right? But it's the whole thing is like, you're a communist because you're supporting tariffs, and Trump is an asshole, and the solution is Bitcoin. Bitcoin fixes this. Like, to me, is just so fucking immature, because they're not living in the real world. They're still, like, when coupled with what you just said, you know, Bitcoin's decades away from being ready anyway. There's no, like, Bitcoin fixes this tomorrow. Even if we wanted it, even if Trump turned around tomorrow and said, we are going to make Bitcoin the reserve currency of the fucking world tomorrow, not going to fucking happen. Still, like, it's just going to take way too long. And, you know, if that was to happen, it would also, like, just FYI to all the people who want to see Bitcoin help the rest of the world, it would crush the rest of the world, because nobody on the planet would be able to fucking afford any Bitcoin. Like, talk about, like, inequality. Like, you know, so that's a whole other thing. So, you know, it leaves you with, what are the moves that you have to make? And I think the current moves, the current layout, the current things that have been done, I think are great. And when you couple in the fact that we are at war, we're fighting for the soul of the West, do we want a kinetic war, or should we take another approach? This is another approach, and this actually strengthens the West. It ideally lowers the amount of money we're sending out and increases the amount of productivity at home. Like, if it creates this sort of an incentive mechanism and starts to get people locally in the West, and in particular the US, starting to think about how to innovate locally and domestically and build and do all that sort of stuff. And as we said earlier, is if it creates a situation where other nation states also start to think, well, fuck you, we're going to think about ourselves. Like, all of this sort of, like, mishmash of things.
That's an interesting positive side effect. Yeah.
I gotta clarify a point, because otherwise I've got, like, phone calls and emails and DMs from Gene Epstein when I say this, and he lectures me and he gets mad at me. But when I said that if you end if you keep these tariffs really high and you have a bunch of U.S. dollars flood home, I said it would be inflationary. I want to clarify, price inflationary, not monetary inflation. The monetary inflation occurs with the actual creation of the currency units. I'm talking about price inflation. You bring home trillions of dollars that are circulating all over the world, and you now have them circulating within the U.S. Well, easy supply-demand type of calculus there. Yep. You're going to have prices skyrocket. So that's what I'm talking about. And the
trip money dilemma, flooding home. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, you know, creation of money. It's just all of money that isn't in, isn't on the demand here that would be suddenly. So there's real consequences from these actions, and people need to be aware of them. And I think, well, Trump probably isn't. I know some of his economic advisors, like Scott Bessent, probably is. So these are really interesting, you know, additional variables that people have to consider with prescribing things, because I don't think people think this through on a deep enough level. A lot of people are, you know, very 101, where they're just like, I just want pain and punishment of my enemies, and like that's all there is to it. And
yeah, it's there's like, a lot of nuance. There's
just a ton of nuance. So this is why I wanted to have you guys on, is because I think having a very, you know, well-rounded panel to analyze all of the sides of this thing is necessary. Because I mean, this we're talking about. Really, what we're talking about is centrally planning an economy, like, which is totally counter to libertarian ethos. But like, we don't have the option of not having a centrally planned economy. So now we're just debating over how it's centrally planned. It's kind of how these things go. But it's really challenging. And there's going to be, you know, fits and starts. There's going to be like, you're going to have setbacks in this. So I am willing to be patient with Trump, but he could demonstrate a lot to me by, you know, cutting ties with some nefarious actors, bringing prosecutions against some nefarious actors, not getting us into a war with Iran, things of that nature would make me believe he's the real deal. Actually negotiating an end to the war in Ukraine. Like, these are all things that I need to see to be confident that he's actually heading that direction, because what he did in 2020 was pretty fucking catastrophic. And I just want to make sure that I'm not being sold out. And that's my concern.
Yeah. I will say there's a lot of really interesting, like, you know, the whole art of the deal thing. Like, every time somebody brings it up, I just kind of laugh, because it's like, he does something you don't like or whatever, and it's just art of the deal. He does something you like, and he's a genius, and he's like, he's just going to do it, you know? And so it like kind of cracks me up. But I see some of the things he does, and I'm like, there's no way he just has this one playbook, and it keeps working. Like, he did it with the strategic Bitcoin reserve. Is that he comes out and he tweets about Solana and Cardano, and then suddenly all of the, like, the who's who of crypto come out and be like, this is not a good idea. We should not be putting, like, Coinbase, Brian Armstrong comes out and is like, we should not be, this is going to be very difficult, and we're going to have a bunch of equities. Bitcoin is different, you know, and now everybody's like arguing for a Bitcoin only. And then he just kind of like, okay, strategic Bitcoin reserve. And then it's like signed, and everybody's like, whew. And I just, all I can think is that like everybody was arguing how, what a terrible idea this was. And now everyone is relieved. And it's because I think like Trump does, if I want to believe he's a genius, if I want to steel man the fact that he is just playing this game and he's good at it, he's just good at poker. Like the thing, like the Gulf of America, I think is such a perfect example of, it doesn't really cost anything, but it just makes everybody at the table think you're crazy and that you might just do the next, it's like putting a blind bet where you didn't even turn over your cards and you've just got a two of hearts. And he's like, 100,000, why not? And so everybody actually thinks, like, I thought the Greenland thing was a troll.
Me too.
Now I don't know.
Yeah.
Now me, I'm neither. Not sure.
I gotta point this out real quick, because I think that Trump's success in negotiations is so indicative of the feminizing of the world, because he approaches trade negotiations and just deal making as any red-blooded, testosterone-infused man has throughout the past 200 years. But but he's such, it's like, it's such a dying breed in this country. Yeah. It's just like, it's received as if you're, you know, watching an angel land or something. Like, it's just so, like, no one can fucking believe what they're seeing. It's like, this is just negotiation 101. You You have the cards. You have the chips. You ask for everything that you want and more, and then you settle where you want. Like, this is fucking simple shit. And people are like, genius. I'm like, what? Like, the way he mogs other leaders, where he fucking handshakes them, brings them in tight. It's just like, it's pure alpha negotiation shit. This is not genius level stuff. This is like, I don't know, but I guess it's rare enough that it is now.
Well, it's I think
the exception
I'll say
it's proof of the rule, right?
Yeah. The exception is proof of the rule, but I think it's also like it requires a level of charisma and character to kind of pull that off, you know, because there's people who just like, yeah, just exactly. Like, and he's
confidence. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying with the feminization of men. That's that, like,
100%. Like,
just the fact that he's confident and he walks in there and he owns the room and he fucking.
It's this weird thing.
You know, he browbeats somebody and then he fucking hugs another and he compliments another and then he talks shit to another. It's like, you're just being a dude. You know? Like, I don't know.
This is why, like, I had this talk with someone a couple weeks back. It's like the jock is more important than the nerd, because the jock is like just naturally like that's the person who is the natural leader and it's the natural pecking order. And Trump has and always will be a jock, and he doesn't need to be a fucking 8D genius who's like got all this sort of stuff planned. It's just like, this is what we're doing.
And everybody else is just,
that's it.
Well, and I think the reason that it's so important right now is because we just have too many nerds. I mean, we have a bunch of people that are like not even in the game. And then you have like the people that are in the game are tons of nerds and almost no jocks. And I all the people in the fucking EU, von der Leyen, all these scumbags, like they're not even nerds. They're just like
parasites.
Just dance, right?
Horribly, in my opinion, in the picture that I paint in my head, it feels like horribly insecure people with power, and they become defensive and vindictive, and they think you have to listen to them, and then they do just horrible things because they're like, I'm powerful and I can get away with it. It's just a massive amount of insecurity with a massive amount of power.
It's wielding vengeance because you were stuffed in a locker, you know, whereas the jock didn't have that experience. Like, Trump's been wealthy and famous and had all the hottest women, and it's just like, so he doesn't need that level of gratification. He doesn't need to actually punish people viciously. Once he gets his way, he's just like, I got my way, we're good, like, now we can go back to regular relationships. Whereas the EU leadership is like, no, we're gonna lock you in your fucking house for the rest of your life, and we're gonna, you know, put carbon tariffs or taxes, and, you know, they're just
retrained into the proper way of thinking.
Anyways, I gotta wrap here. So let's do closing comments from both of you guys, and then we'll head out. Thank you, man.
No worries. Go, Guy, you go first.
Okay. Yeah. Basically, on just kind of the big picture is, I will say, Svetsky, you actually have a much more nuanced opinion. And I have been on the fence about it, and I'm still on the fence about it. But it's just really interesting. Like, politics is different now. Like, the scope of what is, like, going back to your point of like shaking it up, it's definitely shook, you know, and it at least gives me some sort of hope that things will just start to, like, maybe we don't specifically go down this course or down this course. Maybe we just kind of separate a little bit and balkanize and start figuring out our own little shit, you know, like stop with all the political in peace, like everybody becoming like the average of everything, and like, okay, actually you have your opinion and you go do your thing and I'll have mine and I do mine, and maybe we actually come up with a solution in the mix of us actually trying to be active about our decisions and not just kind of like going with this blah of the status quo, which was a horrible, horrible trajectory to be on. So I'm entertained.
Cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. Maybe a little, there is definitely optimism. Yeah.
That's where I'm
mixed in with the entertainment. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like cautiously optimistic. I'm not a true believer. I don't have faith in Donald Trump, which gets people furious with me, but I'm just being honest. I don't have faith in him. Sorry. But I have seen enough from him to give him a chance, and I will continue to do so. But in the meantime, I'm going to hold his feet to the fire and continue to demand everything that he's promised and everything that is slow rolled and just keep putting the pressure on. Because I think that, like, that's the one thing about this White House that's totally different from any other in my lifetime, is that these fucking people are absolutely paying attention to what trends online. And as insane as it is, I have enough reach that, like, I know my shit circulates in that world. And, like, if you're constantly beating the drum, where the fuck are the Epstein files? Like, they respond to that. Dan Bongino came out yesterday saying, hey, just because you don't know what we're doing doesn't mean that we're not working on it. Like, everybody chill out. Like, they're feeling the pressure. And I think that's what I implore Trump supporters to do, is, like, sure, trust the plan, have faith, whatever, whatever. But please, please let them know you expect delivery. And I think that'll help. Yeah. Sorry, Alex, go for it, man.
No worries. My comments are, I'm glad we did this, first of all. Second of all, is I'm probably the most obviously optimistic here. And as Guy will know, having read the book, I'm a student of the great men theory of history. And I believe that history is shaped by unique individuals who have the capacity to be so counter to the status quo that they literally bend the arc of eternity towards them. And whether that's an Alexander or a Napoleon or a Hitler or a Steve Jobs or a, you know, Trump or whatever, like, these people change, like, history shifts because of them. And I think Trump genuinely belongs to that group. I think he's got the aura, he's got the charisma, he's got the fortitude, he's got that about him. And I think that's very unique in the modern world, which every single quote unquote leader is just a fucking bitch. And he just has that presence. And for me, it gives me a lot of hope for the West. And, you know, me, I'm a total fucking, European Western maximalist, in the sense that I want to see our people prosper. And we fucking built the world. And we have no right to, we have no need, sorry, to be a bunch of guilty bitches, where everyone tries to make us feel like, you know, we're the ones that did everything wrong to the world when we actually fucking built everything. So I think Trump is a force for good in that direction. I think the moves that are being made are in the right direction. And my final message, I guess, to people is to, what Guy and Clint said, like, hold to the fire, but also, put your energy behind the movement and reinforce it, because what matters here is not to be like a fucking lulbitarian, like, oh, I don't want to do anything, sit on the sidelines and just criticize. Like, that person doesn't fucking do anything and they're just like, just in the fucking way. Like, get on and roll, or get the fuck out of the way. And when you're on side, yes, keep people around you and everything, like, accountable, that is very important, but roll fucking with it, because this movement needs momentum. Like,
agreed. And let me just add to, the other thing that I do that a lot of libertarians don't is I applaud Trump when he does things that we like. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a tendency for people not to want to do that, because then they get accused of being, oh, you're a fucking MAGA Trump supporter. Like, who gives a shit? Like, is he delivering you what you want or not? When he is, fucking say so, man. Like, that's okay. That adds Doge? The energy. That ends. Doge that adds the momentum. Yeah, Doge is great.
Fucking great.
USAID.
Ross Ulbricht is free.
USAID.
Like,
there's
a lot of things that I've.
Come on,
I was,
man,
like, holy crap, this is kind of wild.
So yeah. Like, if he's,
but then
doing
there's
the right
Iran
thing.
Iran thing, yeah. And yeah. You know, which,
and that could get very ugly. I don't know. Yeah. But I just want to say, just a kind of closing comment. I agree with you. Like, great men throughout history do change the arc of humanity and how things play out. And Trump has the capacity to be that guy. I'm just saying, he's not that guy yet. Like, you could, like, he's already accomplished things that are fucking unbelievable. There's no doubt about that. But, like, if you want to actually change the trajectory of human history, he has that power right now. He has that opportunity. Don't sleep on it. Don't take it for granted. Fucking take swings. You're in your, I don't know, 80s or whatever he is. Like, you've got a decade, maybe 20 years if you're lucky, left. Take fucking swings, act with courage, do what's right, salvage Western civilization, Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have that at your fingertips, but you cannot be sold out to donors. You have to act with courage, and you have to do so fearlessly. You've already fucking almost died. So I'm not saying you lack courage. You clearly have some, but this is going to take even more than you've already given. Do you have that? And then one more point to his supporters. Even if you trust the plan, even if you think he's that great man and he's already accomplished enough to change the arc of human history, that doesn't mean that you can't also become that. That doesn't mean that you can't also be a change agent that changes the trajectory of humanity in your own right. So don't always just look to heroes and leaders to fucking save you. What if he fails? I guess is what I'm saying. Like, we all have to be in the position of changing things as best we can in our day-to-day, even if that's just starting a family and having kids and raising them right. Like, whatever level you can change these things, do that too. Don't just wait for Trump to fix everything. That's it. Love you guys. Thank you for tuning in.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And I am very serious that I am super curious what you guys think about this, where you think my take is naive or where you think it's spot on, and same and vice versa for Svetsky and Clint. I'm genuinely curious because I don't have a strong foothold on this issue. I just kind of have a general philosophical take from the broader economic picture, but there's so much going on and there's so much nuance because politics is just, it's a game. There's definitely that element of these people are playing poker with the lives and the livelihoods of the people in their countries. So it's a really interesting dynamic and it just seems like a total mess to me, but we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. With that though, thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to share this out with everybody you know, especially if they are looking for the place to get into Bitcoin, to understand Bitcoin. Anybody who has listened to me for the last 7 years of this show has done great. Nobody has lost their ass. Nobody has lost Bitcoin, a bunch of money on crypto. They haven't invested in garbage. The message of this show has been the same thing from the beginning, and it has been consistent, and it works. You should buy Bitcoin. You should save. Live beneath your means. Stay away from crypto. Do not gamble. Do not trade your Bitcoin. Focus on your life and build a strong foundation, and you'd be doing great. You'd be doing fantastic if you've been listening to this show and doing that. I try my best to lay out the argument as to why, and I hope that the last 7 years have been good evidence as to why that was good advice. So share it out to everybody that you want to get into Bitcoin and you think there's a good explanation or a good argument that might tip the scales or pique their interest. And then don't share it out to the people you don't like and who you don't want to get into Bitcoin until really, really late. This show is just for the people you like. All right, check out the Human Rights Foundation. A shout out to a wonderful team and organization for all of the incredible work that they do. Check out their Financial Freedom Report, the newsletter, news and updates and everything that's going on for human rights and liberty around the world. And grab yourself a Blockstream Jade Plus hardware wallet. You can get 10% off with the code GUY. Don't forget a month free of Cloaked Wireless. That is for a limited number of buyers, so go ahead and jump on that if you're interested. And then BitKit, the on-chain and Lightning wallet that just works and has a beautiful design. And that will do it today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, and until then, guys, that's my two sats.